Blog Talk Radio.
AS, this is AST Radio.
Hey, what's going on, guys? Welcome to a new episode of the Snatchback Podcast. You have yours truly, Arden Sports Talk here. I have my guy Nick with me, at Nick Bond. What's going on, Nick?
Not much, man. How's it going? Thanks for having me on again.
No problem, man. Thank you for coming on, man. And I also want to say to those that checked out the first episode, thank you. We really appreciate it. The numbers via Blog Talk Radio and YouTube were pretty good. So I really appreciate you guys. I know Nick definitely does too. But yeah, man, let's go ahead and get into it. Nick, I'm going to start with you, man, because I have a lot of things that popped up in my mind from watching basketball this last week. But what were some things that, you know, that really, really stood out to you?
Well, I think we've all kind of been pretty in awe about this. And I know you, I believe you brought it up when you and I were kind of going over what we're going to discuss today. Andre Drummond from the Pistons.
I
think everyone looked at this guy, and he's just been posting some incredible numbers. But to kind of give a little bit of background information on Andre Drummond, I think to most basketball fans, this isn't a guy who's coming totally out of nowhere. He was a ninth overall pick in the pretty heavily lauded 2012 draft at UConn.
Yep.
And last season, in his first year under Stan Van Gundy, he averaged about, I want to say, 14-14. Played all 82 games, showed a lot of progress as a role man in the pick-and-roll scheme Stan Van Gundy runs. So in his last few games last night against the Warriors, he posted 14 points, 15 rebounds. Against Portland the night before that, 29 points, 27 rebounds. And then earlier on in the week against the Pacers, he put up 25 points, 29 rebounds. Right now his averages are 9.6 rebounds per game and 1.9 blocks per game with a 26.84 PER. So what this guy's doing, it's Wilt Chamberlain-esque. You know, it's still early on in the season, but I think if you're already talking awards, I guess you've got to have Andre Drummond in the most improved player discussion. And maybe if he keeps this up, maybe even in the MVP discussion. But still, like I said, it's early, but Andre Drummond's playing some excellent basketball.
Most improved player discussion, and heck, that's crazy. You know, I'm not going to say crazy. The man might be, if he keeps this up, I'll probably say for at least another month, he could be in the best center discussion. Because I know you Dwight Howard haters are not going to like this, but ever since Dwight, we really haven't had an answer to the best center in the league discussion. There's been different names. Some of you guys said Mark Gasol. Some of you guys said Boogie Cousins, you know. But Dwight Howard was the last one that really had that position on lock, going back to his Orlando days. I think that's something that you will agree with me. I think Andre Drummond could make a run for best center in the league because, again, this is a man who, yes, technically is averaging 19-19, but before last night he was averaging 20-20. So when I look at a man like that, along with the fact that he's winning, I honestly give him a chance to be the best center in the league by the end of the year. Because Marc Gasol, he's going to give you flashes here and there. And I think if you're a Marc Gasol for best center in the league supporter, I think you're really pushing that based on his style of play and how he plays. Because statistically speaking, he's never been an impressive player from the numbers. You know, like he's always been maybe a 17-9 player, things like that. And this year, he's only averaging 13-6. So when I look at Andre Drummond, but another player I want to bring up too, man, that's just been a big part of the Pistons. And he really impressed me when I watched him versus Detroit, Nick, is Reggie Jackson. Yeah. Reggie Jackson can ball. And when I watch Reggie Jackson, that makes me even now look at Sam Presti a little funny once again, because it was like, first, you had James Harden, you let him go. I mean, hindsight's 20/20, and now Reggie Jackson. But at the same time, should I also give kudos to the OKC organization for developing players like this?
Well, with Reggie Jackson, it's a little different than Harden because Reggie Jackson had to get out of OKC. I mean, OKC, and OKC had to get rid of him, too, because he was a guy who wanted to be a starter elsewhere. He wasn't happy in OKC. You got to trade guys like that. And he's ended up being, you know, in Detroit last year, he played about 30 games or so, and he averaged, I want to say, about 17-9. And then he got that big deal in the offseason. He got a 5-year, $80 million deal. And a lot of people were like, whoa, you know, Reggie Jackson got that much money? And I remember thinking to myself, that's a lot of money now, and maybe he won't be worth it, but I think he's going to prove a lot of people wrong this year, and so far he has. You know, he's not an amazing dribbler, and he's not that great of a shooter, but he's excellent at the pick and roll. He's good enough defensively. He's a good lob passer for Andre Drummond. I'm really impressed with Reggie Jackson. You know, top 5 point guard, all that. Maybe not. I don't know. Probably no. No, he's not a top 5 point guard.
It depends on what 10. You're talking about. Are you talking top 5 in the East? Because top 5 in the East, we can make that work. We can make that work. Yeah, top 5.
Yeah,
top 5 overall.
I tend to not like doing positional debates as much as I used to. But in theory, if someone wanted to do a top 5 point guard list or whatever in the East, yeah, Reggie Jackson would probably make his way to that by the end of the season. They got to see him in a full season.
Oh yeah,
but
basically off the top, we could basically go John Wall, Kyrie, Lowry, Reggie Jackson, and then what, Rose?
So yeah, right now, Rose is pretty bad. I would say George Hill is probably a top 5 point guard in the East right now.
That's actually a great point. Yeah, George Hill. No, I gotta start giving George Hill a little more respect. Man, I'm so used to him being at a certain level that I'm not used to him being the man that's an 18-6 guy. So, you know what?
He's really good. I'm a big fan of his.
You're gonna be responsible for me for now looking at George Hill in a new light. All right. So George Hill, top 5 point guard in the East. We got that. Rose, you out of here. Get him out of here. I just wanted to bring up one thing.
What about Jeff Teague?
Jeff Teague. Oh, yeah. Jeff Teague.
Yeah.
You know what? I'll put Jeff Teague in the 5 right now, and I sub Kyrie out since he's hurt. But we already know when Kyrie comes back, he's right back in there. Because in my opinion, in my opinion, I always thought Kyrie was a top 5 point guard in general. Like, for me, I only looked at 3 point guards that I feel was definitively better than Kyrie. And I think you know those 3. Steph, Chris Paul, and Westbrook. For me,
oh, yeah, for sure. Well, those are the 3 best point guards in the league right now anyway. Those 3 are better than anybody right now.
Yeah, but that's how I always felt about that. So, Kyrie, coming back, please. I really appreciate it. But one thing I wanted to share with you was a thought of mine. And it's inspired by the relationship that is between social media and Kobe Bryant, because Kobe, both of us know, this man is discussed on a daily basis by basketball fans, by media. And before I go into this, I just want to let you and I want to let people know, look, I am not an avid Kobe defender. I am not a Laker fan. I have been very critical of Kobe Bryant at times, okay? But I do feel, and from just seeing the discussions on Kobe and even on my dude Allen Iverson, this is it. I'm not going to delay it any longer. I feel as if because of social media's impact today and where it's going, that I believe social media is starting to ruin players' legacies. And I think Kobe Bryant is becoming a prime example of that. There, I said it. I think social media, to an extent, is now chipping away and ruining Kobe Bryant's legacy.
I agree. Now, here's kind of my view on Kobe Bryant. And to piggyback off the social media thing, social media is the place where we can overreact. I know I've do it plenty. I know I'm probably guilty of it. I'd like to think I'm not as guilty of it as I used to be when I was younger. But, you know, it's, and Twitter specifically is the place where we can overreact. And, you know, if a guy like Damian Lillard, for example, a fringe, you know, like a fringe elite player, or a fringe really great player.
All-star. Let's just call him
right
all-star. He's an all-star.
Yeah, he's an all-star, yeah. Say a guy like that comes out and drops 45 or 50 points in a game, people aren't just going to enjoy it. They have to make it a is-he-elite thing or something like that. And people tend to do that kind of stuff in social media. And you see, and Kobe Bryant was kind of, you know, the patient zero of that. The reason Kobe is being so talked about this year, and I know I've talked a lot about Kobe, it's a fascinating subject, is he's 37 years old. he's coming off some really bad injuries, including that Achilles injury he suffered a couple years ago. That was really the biggest domino to fall with his injury history as of late. It's, mm-hmm. you know, he has no lift on his shot. He's playing on arguably the worst team in the NBA. I mean, it's what's incredible to watch is, and it's sad too at the same time, I will say, because this is a basketball fan. You don't want to see, you know, an all-time great like Kobe, top 15 player ever. You don't want to see a guy go out like this, but he's going out the way he always played. And mm-hmm. when you watch him play and you hear some of the stuff he's saying, you know, it's come out that, you know, he doesn't really care about these young guys. You know, you got to give me the ball. You know, it makes sense that Kobe's career would end like this. As sad as it is, it does make sense that Kobe would go out like this. A guy who really just always wanted to do things his way. And I'm not saying this mm-hmm. in admiration, by the way. I'm not saying this in admiration of Kobe. But okay. It's fascinating to watch because I think he truly believes that he can still put up the kind of games he was putting up just, you know, 3 or 4 years ago. And I don't think I think he knows that his body is, you know, worn down, but I don't think he wants to believe it. And he really is fighting against, you know, father time and, you know, his injury history. And it's awe-inspiring and not.
Again, but you not know what it is, way. Though?
It's just insane to watch a man as worn down as him put it up with some of the dumbest.
You know what
shots
it is, though? I know. Like, I get that. But you know what it is? I'm fine with what you're saying because I feel like at the end of the day for you, you still have some perspective on who Kobe Bryant is. Like I could just tell by what you're saying. My problem, which is why I'm saying I think social media is ruining athletes' legacies, is because of the fact that people's thoughts on athletes, on the game, everything basically these days is what have you done for me lately?
Exactly.
Right now. What have you done for me? There's no perspective. Like, I get it. Like, I'm sad watching Kobe become washed and playing the way he is, but at the same time, I'm not going to forget that the man has played 20 years but has
right.
had a 15-year run of dominance. Dominance. I'm not talking longevity, even though that's hard to achieve, and I'm not trying to take shots at anybody that prefers longevity, but the man gave us 15 years of dominance. Before the Achilles, he was just averaging 27-5-5. I'm seeing people take what's happening to Kobe and want to lower him down on the list or suddenly want to paint this picture of Kobe as if that's who he is. And that's not. Okay, he's washed. He's struggling. But this is still the Black Mamba. This is still the man who was the greatest shooting guard ever that's not named Michael Jordan. And another problem I have with it is, and this one hurts me the most, is I really hate that social media is now ruining and changing the legacy of Allen Iverson for the next generation. Because nobody can tell me at the end of the day, Allen Iverson was that guy for me. Allen Iverson deserves to be considered a GOAT in some people's minds that look at him that way. Because the man was that dude. I get it, the shooting numbers. I get the size and all the stuff that comes with it. But why do social media, why do we have to have these discussions about AI? Why do we have to compare them to everybody else? Because you're basically, not saying you, but you're basically lowering and demeaning a guy's impact to the game. Why is that? That bothers me more with Allen Iverson because I see his name brought up all the time, and it's always in a matter that's not good.
Well, yeah, growing up, Allen Iverson is my favorite player to watch. He's one of my favorite players of all time. But a lot of people today, I'll see ask questions on Twitter like, AI is better than Westbrook, right? Or AI is better than Steve Nash or Steph Curry. And, you know, those guys are all better than AI. AI was really good, but I think people need to take him for what, you know, he was. They need to just understand his context. He was, this little guy who just came out, dribbled circles around everybody, and just was somehow able to score a ton of points, no matter how many shots he took. And I think he's a top 50, 75 player all time. People are ruining him by comparing him against just guys who are simply more efficient and better. And I hate when people do that because it's putting down a guy who is just really good and they're ignoring context.
Exactly.
That's another thing social media does. People are really, you know, they just don't understand nuance or context when it comes to any kind of sports discussions. And it's annoying, but you know, it's just the way it is on social media these days. It's hard to find.
But the thing
you know,
is, though, the thing is, though, why do we have to always compare? Like, and that's the thing too. I feel like fans don't understand what they're doing when you want to do these constant comparisons and these debates. Is you're, and honestly, I think you're not saying you, but again, I'm just talking to those that do it. I feel like they don't understand that you're basically disrespecting those that came behind, that came
yeah.
before this generation. When you talk
right.
down on the Kobe's, the AI's, or when you talk down on players that played in the 80s, the 70s, the 60s, the 50s, these guys laid down the groundwork.
Mm-hmm.
These guys, what they did at that time was remarkable, still remarkable. So why do you want to have these conversations? Why do you want to have these debates, especially about an era and a time that you may not understand completely? Because every time you look at
players,
you're
going to
look at it from the standpoint, what?
I think, you know, comparing players can be fun and interesting, but when people do it without just, you know, when they just go by, oh, rings or all-star appearances, that's where it gets, you know, silly and uninformed. It's fun to just kind of use, like, the data and, you know, use, like, basketball reference to compare players and just see what their impact was and, you know, where their impact was, and that's where it's fun to compare players. But I agree, you know, people just want to see a good player today and compare him to a player X from the 1990s, you know, that stuff just gets super annoying.
To me, I just think, before we move on, I think it just comes down to this. I feel like it comes down to is people have these discussions, people want to do these comparisons, but there's a lack of perspective and context. Simple
right.
as that. And I feel like because of that, and because of the fact that we're all in this what have you done for me lately era, it's hard to understand perspective, understand a player's legacy. And I feel like that is now bringing down players that shouldn't be brought down. No matter what people say, Allen Iverson shouldn't be brought down, period. No matter what discussion, Kobe shouldn't be brought down, period. Can you criticize him? Absolutely criticize, discuss, but don't have it to the point where it's like, dude, you're bringing these guys down. These are legends. These are, in some people's minds, the GOAT, whether we agree or disagree. Like, that's the part that really bothers me. Because another player that I feel like that's going to happen to next, young guy that we should be embracing and that we should just be enjoying the ride. That's another thing too, basketball fans. Let's enjoy the ride. Let's enjoy
mm-hmm.
these cats. It's my guy, Paul George, man. I'm so happy for Paul George to have this incredible start. How you feel about PG? Is Paul George back in your mind, or is he better than ever?
You know, I think he's back. I think it's important for him that he got those 6 games in last year. He didn't get many minutes, you know, per game in his last 6 games he played. But I think that was a good way for him to shake off some of the rust he had. He had a few rough shooting games. Like I think in 3 of his first 4 or 5 games, he shot under 40% or something like that. So he still had a little bit of rust to shake off this year. But his last few games, he's dropped a 27 points, 32 points, 36 points, and 26 points, and he's been shooting much more efficiently the last 3 or 4 games. So, and he's still playing good defense. So it's nice to see Paul George back playing again. Really good young player. I'm a big fan of his.
PG averaging 23, 8, and 5, basically. I know, I think it was an assist that was like 4.8, but we're going to bump that up to 5. KD averaging 30 and 7, back like he never left. And when I see these two play, I really just laugh because of the fact that I remember last year there were some folks who were like, Kawhi, and don't get me wrong, like I love Kawhi Leonard. I'm on record saying that Kawhi Leonard is going to outgrow his role in San Antonio and that he needs to be the man. I'm out there on record, Nick, by the way. I've said that on Twitter. He's going to outgrow his role. He needs to be the man more than they want LaMarcus Aldridge to be the man. But at the same time, when I see Paul George play, and then I think about people who last year were saying, without question, Kawhi Leonard over Paul George, I laughed a little bit.
Oh, I'm one of those people, actually.
Really?
Kawhi? Yeah.
Why? Paul George?
Kawhi's a better defender, and when you watch the stuff he does on offense, it's just more sophisticated. Paul George, you know, he struggled to shoot a lot. His scoring percentages are actually pretty low. I like Paul George, like I said, but Kawhi is better overall offensively. When you watch the Spurs game,
really?
They have him doing offense. Yeah, Kawhi does a lot of sophisticated stuff on offense. He's just better. It's close.
Ooh.
It's close. Great, but I think people are going to see Kawhi's production and think he's noticeably better.
No, he's better. Good. I mean, we
he's
need to get past that
too.
Point. I mean, he is, but at the same time, though, like, PG on his best day was a really – you know what's so funny? Before the injury, people forget Paul George is looked at as the premier defender, at least perimeter-wise, before Kawhi Leonard. Like,
oh, no,
remember that, right?
Yeah, Paul George is a tremendous defender, and I'm not, holding the injury against him at all. Kawhi's just better when you look at his offensive skill set. It's fun to watch the Spurs games because Kawhi is just – it's not even that he's a product of their system. It's that he's so good offensively that they can use him, just in so many ways offensively.
Oh, no, man. I mean, don't get me wrong. Like, it's definitely possible he could get that to that point. But at the same time, I feel like, honestly, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to hold off until I see San Antonio get to a point where they make him their true go-to guy. Then I'm gonna
I mean, just watch Spurs games and just watch Kawhi and how he functions in that offense because it's not always about being the go-to guy or whatever. It's about operating well within your offense and having it's about skill set and Kawhi has a more diverse skill set.
That's true to an extent, but at the same time, though, we know Paul George is going to get his reps. He's the one. Like, I feel like Kawhi Leonard's going to get to that point, or he should be at that point. But at the same time, we know that there's going to be games where he might have 15 to 16 because of the Spurs' balanced attack.
Right, and that doesn't make, Kawhi less of a player. You can't hold that against Kawhi.
No, I'm not holding that. I'm not holding that against him. What I'm saying is I'm just waiting to get to that point. Because if I really get into this and I start going, okay, we're really going to do Paul George versus Kawhi Leonard, then I'm going to mess around and have the whole Kawhi, for me personally, to higher standards if I'm going to look at him like that versus PG. I just feel like it's a different situation. That's why I'm saying for me personally, I just want to wait, and I just want to see more. Because I do watch Spurs games, but at the same time, I also understand what's going on down in San Antonio compared to versus Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
Paul George don't got to worry about, or I don't, not Paul George, I don't got to go into a game thinking, damn, even though Paul George is good, George Hill might have one of those nights, Miles Turner or whoever might have one of those nights. That's the case in San Antonio where Kawhi's extremely talented, but you never know. It could be a LaMarcus night. It could be a Duncan night. It could be a Ginobili. It could be a Parker. It could be the 15 man off the bench night. That's what I'm saying. For me, I'm just going to wait a little longer until he really's there and I feel certain about it to go, all right, for me, that's where I'm going to go. But that's interesting, though, man. That's interesting. You a Kawhi Leonard guy. Kawhi over PG.
Oh, Kawhi is phenomenal. He's incredible.
He is. I'm happy for him. Averaging, 22-7?
Yeah, around that right now,
22-7. That's big time. One thing I want to take a look at before the show wraps up is I want to look at right now the conference standings basically after 2 weeks, And in case you did or didn't know, when we look at the Eastern Conference, right now you have the Cavaliers 6-1, followed by Atlanta, Toronto, Detroit, Chicago, Milwaukee, Miami, and Indiana, in that order from 1-8. And then you look at the West, it's Golden State, not a surprise, San Antonio, the Clippers, the Timberwolves, the Jazz, the Rockets, the Thunder, and the Blazers. Do you see any sudden changes happening really soon to any of those standings?
I think the Timberwolves are going to fall out at some point. There's a lot of young talent on that team, and, with the, tragedy, Flip Saunders passing and all that, I think it did kind of make people forget briefly that they're still a bad team. They're going to be bad for one more year, but, they're going to show a lot of promise. Maybe they won't be as bad as they were last year, but they'll probably be like a 30-win team or something like that. I see that happening in the West. In the East, I think the Bucks will slide out at some point. I've had the Bucks being pretty bad this year. Their defensive front court's terrible. Michael Carter-Williams is terrible. When he gets back or, he's playing again full-time, he'll ruin their offense. So I think Milwaukee will slide out. I think you'll see teams like the Celtics and Wizards establish themselves in the East standings. So those are pretty much the standings changes I see going on right now.
I definitely agree with you, you know, regarding the Timberwolves and the Bucks. I don't know what's going on with them. That's going to be interesting to see them. But I actually wanted to share this thought with you that I have. I was talking to a good friend of mine a few days ago about this, and it's about Anthony Davis.
Mm-hmm.
And it's simply this, Nick. I was telling him, I'm like, if we're really going to hold Anthony Davis, not hold him up, and we're going to crown him and champion him as the next face of the league, or he's going to get to that point. But for me personally, I have to ratchet up that pressure from my side on him. Because my biggest problem right now with players is, not even players, it's really fans and media, which is we love to celebrate and champion a player, but we forget that there's still a responsibility towards them in terms of team success. And for me personally, I know Anthony Davis is going to get his numbers, but I really need to see him and that team get together and win games because I'm more than numbers. I remember growing up in a time where LeBron, Kobe, Melo, those guys were held extremely responsible for their team success, probably more so than their individual numbers. So I just want to let you guys know when it comes to AD and others, I'm putting that pressure on them. I'm way past the individual numbers and performances at this point.
Well, you see, I've never been a fan of, the whole team argument for one player because it takes a team to be good and win games, and that Pelicans team around him isn't good at all. No, he started off not shooting well, but he is picking up his numbers. Right now he's averaging 25 points, 2.8 blocks, 9.3 rebounds. His shooting average is back up to 46. He shot 53 last year, so you know that percentage is probably going to get up. He's getting to the line for it this season. Anthony Davis is an incredible player, and within 2 or 3 years, it's more than likely he will be the best player in the NBA. So I think, instead of using playoff knocks against him, let's just enjoy him. You know, the guy's an incredible player. I've never been a fan, like I said, of using team arguments against a player because, like I said, it takes, five guys on the court to win games. And, let's not forget, he did make the playoffs last year. And he was incredible in that playoff.
Absolutely. It's just, for me, again, I still remember that time 5-10 years ago where, once again, what you're saying about Anthony Davis and your view on it, I barely found anybody that did the same thing for LeBron or Carmelo or Kobe or Chris Paul in New Orleans. And I just feel, once again, I get it about Anthony Davis. I get the numbers. But we're also at the point where for Anthony Davis, because of these players are so young, that we look at them 22, 23, and 24, and we think they're young. But a true 22, 23-year-old in the NBA or in the pros, that's a rookie, if you think about it in most parts, or beforehand, or a second-year player. These guys are about to enter their fourth, fifth, sixth year. That's where I'm at. But, hey, that's the episode of the Stash Crack Podcast. Make sure you follow me on Twitter at Artist Sports. Make sure you follow my guy, Nick, on Twitter at NotNickBong. His Twitter handle's in the description below. Thank you once again to those that checked out the first episode of the Snatchback with me and Nick. Nick, we really did it again.
Yeah, man, it was fun. Thanks again for having me on. I appreciate it.
Yep, better than the first one. I really feel like we're finding a way to bounce off each other, and we really got through this one good, man. So I'll talk to you next time.
It's fun, man. I'm enjoying it.
All right, no problem. Talk to you later. All right, folks, that's the episode. Thank you for listening. Enjoy another week of NBA action. Me and Nick will be back at it. You already know. But before we go, I got to play this just because it makes me feel good.
It's the Sizzling Trade Rumors.
I'll talk to you guys later, man. This is the Snatchback. Peace.